for the existence of our people and a future for white children.
Sounds like paranoia to me. Impossible to maintain their definition of white.
That purity crap is bullshit. They're mutts, acting like best dog in show. Most of those racists need to publicly take DNA ancestry tests, then sit the fuck down with the other losers.
I said, the junkyard dogs are barking the loudest.
This is why we should unite. Blacks and browns should have always been united. You know, we used to be united. We were the Los Angeles Pobladores. 44 brave settlers and 4 warriors from Mexico founded Los Angeles. Over half of the group was of African descent.
I know. People have forgotten, but I know.
We've been led to believe we are each other's enemy. And instead of being as strong as the Amazon River, we're separated like the Black River and the White River in Brazil. Too bad we only unite on Cinco de Mayo, or when a riot is in progress. But even then, we're competing.
Everyone competes for everything. It's called capitalism. She grinned.
Or dating.
That too.
We need to unite the other 364 days too, and not just on special occasions to break out a window in a Korean-owned business, to snatch a flat screen or take a new sofa as reparation.
Tell your people and I'll tell mine, but I don't think it'll help.
I know. They like sofas and TVs.
Oh, yeah. Those riot sales are better than being on The Price is Right.
But on the real, we need to come together. We are the majority. Together we are the mainstream. We must go in one direction and be powerful like the Amazon River, especially the way things are now. We're back in the 50s. They want us to either disappear or shut the fuck up.
I nodded. Divided, we just watch each other fall like we each have cultural dyspraxia.
Cultural dyspraxia.
She tendered a small smile.
If you have time, march with us.
San Bernardino got us on the clock. But I hear you're at protests every day.
If they come for us, they'll come for you. The KKK will march down Crenshaw.
And the Nation of Islam will be there to greet them, along with Crips and Bloods and some old-school Black Panthers. Fools know where to go, and know where to not go.
They know to pick it down by Disneyland or in Simi Valley.
Exactly. In this box, our box between the 10, 405, 110, and 105, they can get a permit to march. But if your people and my people show up, there will be a lot of blood on the dance floor.
She slid Jake Ellis an envelope. DACA rally is in front of the Wilshire Federal Building.
My partner took the envelope, felt its weight. Was starting to wonder if that was for us.
She was more comfortable with me than she was with my African friend.
She went on talking to me.
It pisses me off that so many Mexicans who were lucky to be born here are not siding with the Dreamers. Since they are citizens, those anchor babies think they will be accepted more by America by shunning Mexico and acting as white as possible.
Part of the conditioning.
They think that since they can speak English with no accent, the ones who can't speak perfect English are below them.
It was that way with former slaves, with freedmen, and men who had never been enslaved. Freed people didn't want their daughters and sons to be married to former slaves. They were adamant about that piece of status, almost as bad as the people against race mixing.
With us, the ones here don't want their children marrying wetbacks.
The invisible class system that runs through my community, just like with yours.
Speaking Spanish or the Queen's English, we're all the same to them. Our own will turn on us and push us up front so the violent racists can beat us, will help the racists. And then they will be beaten as well. We have too many traitors, way too many deserters and spies.
We all have spies. Africans captured Africans and sold them to the slavers for guns. The FBI had Uncle Toms inside the Black Panther Party and used their lies to bring the group down.
I saw a movie where Jews betrayed Jews and turned them into Germans. They sided with Hitler. That blew my mind. Jews pretended to be German like my people passed for white.
There will always be sellouts. Judas wasn't the first, but he raised the bar.
I have to get back down on Wilshire so I can stand in this heat and be heard.
Aren't you afraid ICE will just round up everyone down there?
We can't keep living in the shadows. Hiding and being afraid takes too much energy.
Never a dull moment.
All of this fighting reminds me of one of my favorite quotes. To be led by a liar is to ask to be told lies. To be led by a tyrant is to sell yourself and those you love into slavery.
I asked, Malcolm X?
She grinned. Octavia Butler, Parable of the Talents, one of my favorite books.
I grinned. Hey, wonder if you can do me a favor.
What's that?
We have tags to a car. I'm having issues with this dude, personal thing, if you know what I mean. Can you get the DMV on it? We have a contact, but they seem to be on vacation today.
Day like this, everybody not socially aware is at a beach.
The city is a baking parking lot.
You know how L.A. gets every Friday? How soon you need this DMV thing?
It's sort of urgent.
Sure. I have a hookup at the DMV in Englewood.
Jake Ellis showed me the info he'd put in his phone. I showed it to Esmeralda.
She said, Well, Ken Swift, I'll need your number so I can call you.
I gave her my private number, then asked, How much will this set me back?
You scratch my back, I scratch yours.
Quid pro quo.
Something for something.
Favor for a favor.
Cool.
Cool. She hurried back to her Mini Cooper and drove away. The bold message on the back of her DACA t-shirt read, We want to be humanized, not demonized. Jake Ellis handed me the envelope as he pulled from the curb, then followed the Mini Cooper east. The Mini Cooper didn't have any license plates, nothing that could be traced back to the DMV, same as this Mustang.
That cutie was bending your ear and flirting hard.
No, she wasn't. She's recruiting people to fight in this ongoing civil and cultural war.
She likes you. Had her suntanned breasts all in the window for you to look at.
I maintained eye contact, kept it professional.
She was happy to get your number.
It's a business situation, all about Margot and whatever she has going on.
See how Esmeralda made her booty do that happy twitch when she went to her car? That's just how she walks. She used to dance. Rachel Redmond has that same walk. Third time she's talked to you that way. You always passing it up.
If only I were more like you, then I'd break protocol and investigate.
Go investigate Esmeralda. Like Rachel investigated the Russian when you left town.
Thanks for always bringing that up.
Nice tanned legs, tight little body, fit, solid. Bet she can saucer her ass off. She's barely older than my daughter. And she wants you to make her call you daddy.
Bro.
Bruv. Should I follow her for investigation?
If I was still 21, I'd be up there in the car with her, investigating my ass off. Traffic remained bumper to bumper on every freeway and on every main street.
Ken Swift, what do you think it would be like if black Americans had been freed, then given their own state to live in? What if you had been segregated and given land that way? Like those internment camps they call reservations? No, I mean a real state. Like North or South Dakota. Like the many white people who wanted an all-white state. What if they had given black Americans an all-black state of their own? If they had us all corralled in one spot, you know they'd have tested the A-bomb on us. Think so? They injected black men with syphilis, operated on black women with no anesthesia, used black babies as alligator bait in Florida, burned down Black Wall Street and kept it out of the news. They would have dropped an A-bomb on us and nobody would ever have known we'd existed. The government has done a lot. Now, slave catchers are shooting us in the back.
Esmeralda turned left at Crenshaw, and I assumed she was headed toward DACA rallies and heated protests near UCLA. Jake Ellis tooted his horn and turned right, headed south toward our side of L.A., where Muslim brothers were at every intersection selling Final Call newspapers and bean pies.
I looked at the money, mostly 50s, a few 20s, knew it was our standard fee, and handed Jake Ellis half. He put his part in his pocket without counting it. I folded my bills, wished I'd earned $50,000, and stuffed my part of the payday in my suit pocket. I looked in the side mirror, saw what was behind us, then said, Slave catchers.
Six police cars zoomed our way, came up behind us like a raging storm. Jake Ellis said,
Drop your 38 in the stash spot while I trafficate.
I was already stashing my gap before he told me. Jake Ellis turned on his right blinker, pulled over to the right. The fleet of squad cars took to both lanes, passed to an over 60, the Rodney King Brigade wailing and hot on the scent of someone else on the Se Habla Español side of town.
When one time was a half mile away, Jake Ellis signaled, then pulled from the curb. Jake Ellis said, "Cote been on the move all day." I nodded. "Always on the move on this side of town." Jake Ellis shook his head. "I don't know about that dreamer shit Esmeralda is selling."
"What you mean?"
"If people are here illegally, they are not supposed to be here. Her argument is emotional. Makes no sense. They are illegal and want to go march to protest. That's ridiculous."
"It's the intersection where political and emotional meets culture and entitlement."
"I don't like your new president. He reminds me of Nigerian con men."
"But why everybody on the left mad at Adolf Hitler, bomb-dropping Obama, deporting illegals both day and night?"
"Don't diss my boy. He split up a lot of families, in between dropping bombs like a Gap Band record."
"Tread lightly.
Illegal means illegal. They are breaking the law and are mad because they're getting called on breaking the law. She's right about the dissension. I went to a board of directors meeting. Legals hate illegals because the illegals want to skip the long line because they have jumped a wall and picked a few berries. And that anchor baby thing makes no sense."
"We've never talked about that. Same immigration problem in Africa?"
"At least 3 million are in Ghana alone. Most of the beggars on the streets. Illegals have no jobs, and poverty brings crime. That is a fact. The same as here, but different. But here, the illegals coming here to have babies, American babies, and demanding rights is ludicrous."
I said, "Like she said, this was their land."
"Was. Like this car used to belong to Ford, then the car dealer. Now it's mine."
"You were antsy when she was talking. You wanted to debate all she said?"
"If some country was giving out checks for breaking the law, I'd rush there too. They're not having that madness in Mexico or Central America, yet they feel entitled to it up here."
"Closet conservative?"
"Ghanaians, Kenyans, Tanzanians, and Nigerians love your arrogant president."
"You and Garrett could have been friends."
"Oh, that racist coward blew a chance at an intellectual debate from his first sentence."
We talked more, but something remained off. I'd been his friend most of my life. I knew when Jake Ellis was pissed off. I was pissed, too. That sit-down with Garrett, heavy on my mind. Jake Ellis said,
"We have to talk about Margot before we go home."
I nodded. "I know."
Chapter 12.
We cruised, and 5 minutes later we were in Culver City, in the zip code named after a real estate developer from Nebraska, back when only a certain race of people could buy property, and the Jews were locked out, Italians were treated like shit, and the black man wasn't allowed to own anything but his own misery. Jake Ellis parked on Washington Boulevard right under the Expo train line, the route that stretched from downtown L.A. to Santa Monica. Everything west of here was majority white. If you drove east, within 10 minutes, you'd swear you were in Mexico. As we got out of the car, I asked, "What's this new spot called?" He motioned at a sign. "Platform Shopping Mall." We walked side by side.
"Bro, anything here black-owned?"
He laughed.
"Bro, come on now. Popeye's chicken ain't gluten-free."
"I see SoulCycle. That's not a black business?"
He laughed harder.
"Black people lost the right to soul when the train went off the air."
"Yeah, the top soul singers are Adele and Sam Smith."
This part of Culver City was filled with shops that sold shirts and dresses that cost more than a Walmart worker's paycheck. Cost $7 for a small ice cream. Simple folding chairs sold for $1,250. Cost $8 for juices. Area was clean. It was crowded and quiet at the same time.
A little nervous, I asked, "I left my .38 stashed in your car. We have a job here?"
"You don't need it."
"Stuff on my mind."
My nostrils flared. "What's going on, bro?"
"Rob, I'll get to that."
"Well, you know I don't like being in the heat and sun like you do."
"Won't be but a minute. I need to decompress, get Pasadena out of my blood."
As we eased into the area, families looked at us.
They looked at us,
but no alarms went off.
If I was still in my 20s, this same crowd would be uneasy.
A black man in his 20s was always seen as a threat. We were all Trayvon or Mike Brown.
I'd lived long enough and aged out of that group. But a black man never aged out of being seen as trouble from sea to shining sea.
Jake Ellis got an ice cream cone, smiled like a 2-year-old kid, and I copped a single origin espresso. We copped a squat on a bench outside of Blue Bottle Coffee,
watched the heat-loving young Europeans and their spouses and seeds living in the absence of too many brown and black-skinned minorities, they were as at peace without us as we were without them. Jake Ellis said, "This is my secret chill-out spot. Calmer than the Grove. I used to chill at the villas at Playa Vista. Real nice down there, too, especially if I take a date to happy hour or to the movie theater. Real impressive down that way. Actors and Clippers and Lakers live down there. Sounds like Gold Digger Central. You know it. Why are we here? Because being around you is stressful," I asked. "How long you been peeping this spot?"
"I've been coming here a month or so."
"A lot closer to the house. Small, few shops, no crowd. Perfect. Cool to have a couple of chill-out spots to choose from. It's quaint and sterile. All the businesses face inward, so from the streets you can't tell what's up. My bet is that they don't want everybody knowing that this spot is here. It's like leaving the world I know and sneaking into the basement heaven."
"The basement?"
"In my heaven, Ghanaians are on the top level, in the penthouse, eating jollof."
I asked, "How much rent over this way?"
"Same as the villas at Playa Vista."
"Which is?"
"Between $3,000 and $5,000 a month to rent a cracker box."
"Makes sense. We're in a saltine bubble."
"But it's a nice bubble. So nice, people should talk with French accents."
"Birkenstocks and fat wedding rings,"
Jake Ellis said. "Don't hate. They dated smart, married money.
Bet they married without a prenup.
You know what I see when I look at these people?
Success.
Felons. Criminals. People don't look at this crowd and think criminals, but they are. We assume they are clean, but they have DUIs and felonies on their records, and they get second, third, and fourth chances. Even with a prison record, they can get a better job than a black man with no record and a college degree. These men file for bankruptcy every chance they get, shake off debt, and I bet they have more than one baby mama and are behind on child support."
"The neo-Nazis have taken over Twitter."
"Most of those hooligans are violent criminals, but the police let the thugs wear masks and gloves and do their thing from Berkeley to Charlottesville. If you use or sell silly string on Halloween, you can get $1,000 fine and or 6 months in jail. But these goons can wear masks and attack you and nothing happens. You get rounded up for small things, for anything. They are stupid criminals, unemployed, selling meth, selling opioids, selling cocaine, drinking and getting high, on probation for robbery and theft, DUIs up the yin-yang, lost their licenses for failure to pay child support, and are inbred, herpes-spreading, HIV-ridden lunatics who have turned racism into a cult fueled on their low self-esteem and unwarranted anger directed against my people."
That assessment got a slow clap from me. I said, "Jake Ellis, you are the most interesting man in the world."
"Bruv, you know I look at them the same way they look at us. They know nothing about me, yet judge me. I know their history, have read of their global massacres. Their religious leaders are pedophiles or pedophile adjacent. They've never scared me. I can look in their eyes and they know I have seen their souls and know their truth. They've learned nothing about us and expect us to know everything about them. They cheat their way to the top and use nepotism as a crutch. They are put in charge of Africans much smarter and get to take the credit for African-American excellence. I speak 8 languages, and they talk to me like I'm the stupid one."
"And they still call you nigger."
"Bruv, that is the only bullet they have in their gun.
Silver bullet."
"And the silver was stolen from the mines of Africa."
I nodded. "And they manage to hit us in the heart every time."
"What do you see when you look at them, bruv?"
"I see people who used to hang out on the Sunset Strip, drinking, popping pills, waking up with strangers, people who love to have 3-ways and orgies, then grew up. They still have 3-ways. They still cheat on their spouses. They are unhappy." I said, "And they have low credit scores."
"That part. Bet most of them have credit scores below 600. They are struggling."
I asked, "Your conclusion?"
"Told you. They are no different from us. Yet they think they are superior."
"No different. But in reality, they have police departments and a military, and 1% of them have more financial power than all the blacks in this country will ever have.
If they have power, it is only because you give them power."
"We didn't give them shit. They had guns and kept them away from us."
"Guns?
Take away their guns, the tables turn, and the colonialists run. You heard Esmeralda talking about Ram. They are organizing, buying up guns, have training camps, and are planning a war. The way black people have been treated, I think you'd be doing that.
Yeah, well, we live in the mouth of madness, but we're not the ones gone crazy.
Jake Ellis sucked his teeth. Weak men need guns in every room.
Weak men and gangsters, with guns in their hands, both are grave makers.
Broth, if all black people ran out and bought 20 guns, laws would change.
I nodded.
Well, yeah. From jaywalking to voting rights, they make the laws. They banned Chinese in 1882, banned Indians in 1917, banned Africans in 1924, Japanese internment in 42, now the Muslims. That's not including Jim Crow and black codes.
Jake Ellis said, you know what a law is?
Educate me before your ice cream melts all over your hand, African.
Just some bullshit a rich, powerful colonialist writes down. He can write down any kind of immorality. It doesn't have to be fair to nobody but the man writing it down. And it's unfair. That bullshit law doesn't apply to him or his people. Whatever he wants, he can make legal. Whatever he is afraid of, he can make illegal. Whoever he despises, he makes laws that say they have to leave his country. His law said he could rape black women and it wasn't a crime.
I have read his laws, both new and old. He brought those same laws, writing on paper by his own hand, to Africa. The white man is his own god. He can use ink and paper, and people act like it's just as good as the commandments your Moses allegedly brought from the top of some mountain in the Middle East. White man wrote down that everybody in Africa could be kidnapped and enslaved. He wrote down that the largest continent was a slave field, said that all the dark-hued human beings there were no better than cows, and men like him, men who could not bear the heat of his own god's son, men like him looked at what he had written down, and because it was in the white man's book, in the white man's language, that was the law of the world. No one pulled Africans. They stole people from West Africa. My people. The Dutch, the Spanish, the British, your America. Like it was a contest. They stole your ancestors, my people. Because even though they knew it was immoral, they wrote down that it was legal. And white people from all over joined in. White people?
White people.
That's what they call him on black Twitter.
White people.
I read that some pope went to Cameroon and stood up in front of everybody and apologized to black Africa for the participation of white Christians in the slave trade.
What does an apology from one man do? The systemic damage was done. What action came after the apology? What came with that apology? Did the Pope go down into the basement at the Vatican and sell some of that African art they stole over the centuries and offer money to revitalize what they destroyed? Were diamonds and gold returned? Was a check sent from Europe to any part of Africa? Nah, broth. Didn't no butter come on that toast. That toast was dry and didn't have no jelly or jam to make it sweet. It was a political apology, meaningless and never acted on. Used to keep Africans in a white religion paying monetary tribute to a god who will never accept them. He was no better than the man who beats his wife, buys her flowers the next day, then beats her again the day after. White man's apologies are as good as his treaties have been with the Native Americans. With Africans. With Haitians. With black Americans. The pattern is hidden in plain sight. When you apologize for your wrongs, after that comes actions. Where was the goddamn action? Who here got 40 acres and a mule? I know slave owners were reimbursed for losing their slaves to morality. Slave owners were reimbursed. That is like paying the rapist, the burglar, the thief, because you made him stop his crime. Slaves received nothing for their free labor. Who did America value? And don't get me started with the church. The church reinforced the establishment of colonial governments, especially through the destruction of societal, ethnic, and religious systems in Africa. One man apologized. Must be nice to be able to destroy other cultures, say you're sorry, and walk away with reparations in your hand.
Jake Ellis, you should give a seminar at SO1, or do a TED Talk.
Who would listen?
Truth only works with those holding empty cups. White people, white people, white people, whatever you want to call them, have done the damage. They try and make themselves out to be the normal ones.
They write the laws for others based on their point of view that everyone else is less human. Muslim, Native American, African, African American, all seen by them as less human. That's why a man like Garrett can stand in my face and call me a nigger 4011 times. That word was his slave master's whip today. And I felt every lash.
Motherfucker had the nerve to tell us what should insult us and what should not. White privilege mixed with deep-seated hate and ignorance and lack of a soul.
I nodded. Maybe President Abraham Lincoln was right.
Jake Ellis licked his cone.
Also, Racist Abe argued that blacks and whites should have been separated. Everybody's favorite Republican said that the black man was inferior, would always be inferior. I think he said we were incapable of learning, and stressed that blacks and whites should be separated.
We were separated! We were in Africa, and they were over here raping, pillaging, and spreading diseases. We were apart until Mr. European decided he didn't want to pay other white men a fair price to raise cotton, sugar, and tobacco. He partnered with Britain, crossed the Atlantic in ships named after their god and his son, kidnapped, killed, bribed with guns, and brought back slave labor to keep from paying his own people. We were separated. The good Christians stole Africans and made America great.
Outside of a race war, like you told Mrs. Garrett, how do we fix it?
Just like Nigeria, America needs purging. And the purging has to start first with the educational system and the religious establishments. You can't depend on the oppressor's God.
I sipped my coffee and nodded. My people have done a lot of marching and praying. Your people are wearing out good shoes and begging an earless God. I took a breath, thought about my life. Remembered all the black people like Baldwin who had left, found a place black people were treated better, and almost never came back. Josephine Baker, Nina Simone, Langston Hughes, Charlie Parker, Richard Wright, Paul Robeson. Wherever they went, it wasn't ideal, but it was a different breed of white people. Not the crowd that grew up and were brainwashed by Birth of a Nation. There was no Klan mentality. They were given respect.
You're right. I should have left here at least 15 years ago.
You say that over and over and over and over. You are a scratched record.
I could have lived in Liberia, Switzerland, England, and Barbados a while.
You could have gone to Ghana and met that beautiful Senegalese woman.
Just keep rubbing it in.
Am I lying?
I should have. She could have helped me forget an Ethiopian. No woman could do that.
Well, she could have had fun trying.
You would have had African babies.
Yeah, wanted more kids, but not by different women. And now Margot is pregnant and wants her father to give her 50 grand.
70. That's criminal.
That bothers you.
It seems to bother me more than it bothers you, and that bothers me. And now, with the trip to the Grove, we see someone else. Another boy may be involved.
Yeah. That was why he ran away so fast. If he knows you killed a man, that we killed a man, but he doesn't know who I am as of yet, then our reputation was here before we were. We killed one man. One accidental murder.
And no matter how it happened, that enhanced our status with San Bernardino. We moved up in pay grade. A man only has to kill one person to be seen as a killer the rest of his life. That is our reputation. Jimmy Lee knew that.
In the end, maybe she saw you as a killer, bruv.
I was her husband. I was her protector, her provider.
You may have been her husband, but
she saw you as a killer.
It was more than that. I was African American, and she was African.
She told her family things. They thought you were a dangerous man. That was why a village came to ambush you.
40 men ambushed you. And I bet each one of them was afraid of you.
You are a lion battling a pack of hyenas. Your daughter knows about Florida. We cleaned up the scene, but you never know about DNA. We didn't leave a bloody glove, but you never know. Never know if a drop of blood was left behind. The dead man went missing, and I know they searched his apartment. I know they looked for traces of blood. If Margot says that man's name, put it with yours or ours. Even if there is no dead body to be found, just based on circumstantial evidence, on the word from your child, a child who has no reason to lie other than the hate in her heart, we could be dead men walking.
I need to know how many she has told about Florida.
She's not after you. She's been raised to hate me. I'm not human to her. If she comes after you for 50, she'll come this way too, if she knows I'm in America.
I said. I want to convince myself that she wants that money to go away and have a big African wedding in Addis Ababa.
Don't lie to yourself. That will keep you from lying to me.
I know. Pregnant or not, I know there's more to it than that. Your daughter is pregnant.
I think that part is true.
Why so certain?
Before she said it, she put a hand on her belly.
Before or after, as an afterthought?
Before. A mother's instinctive move to protect her unborn child.
From me.
From the world.
I wanted to hug her, and she rejected me, was protecting her child from me.
Jake Ellis was almost amused.
You're about to become a grandfather.
Grandkid will dislike me as much as its mother and her mother.
He paused, thinking.
How many people we done hurt?
I shrugged.
Hundreds?
One job got out of control.
San Bernardino will never let us forget that.
One.
That was a turd in the strawberry Kool-Aid of life.
And Margot knows about that.
Jake Ellis did an African finger snap, gruffed.
She knows the dead man's name.
I inhaled, rubbed my temples as I exhaled.
Never wanted her to know about this life.
Brav, she has to keep her mouth shut.
I know. If Margot causes a problem, we both know San Bernardino has ice water for blood and won't care if she's your child.
I know.
San Bernardino won't care if she's pregnant. San Bernardino won't give a fuck about whoever was in that red BMW and won't care about the pretty woman he had at his sight.
I know.
San Bernardino will protect the interest and reputation of San Bernardino.
You'd have to handle your own kid, bruv.
I know. Esmeralda will hit me back. Tomorrow we can make a house call.
If Margot talks, if she gets mad because we tracked her to the Grove and the cops come for you, I would have to tell the boss what's been pumping today. San Bernardino will handle her. And while you are locked up, San Bernardino will pay people to get to you from the inside.
We stopped talking. Let the dry heat and smog sit on us for a moment.
Over here there was a rumble. A metro train passed by going west toward Santa Monica and the beaches. Then another sped by going east toward downtown L.A. I wish I hadn't gone to meet my daughter.
I said, I'll look for Margot tomorrow. I'll stalk her Facebook, see where she checks in, then get in my car and surprise her.
Same for the boy in the red car.
I can go with you. Or we can split the tasks. You go after one, I go after the other.
I'll do it on my own. Let me try and find my daughter before it goes off the rails.
You don't have a choice. You go see your daughter, I go visit the boy in the car.
We still have plastic and a shovel in the trunk of your car.
I stay ready. Put a man in a 4-foot-deep hole, and soon as the cold dirt hits his face, he starts to talk. And if he doesn't talk, then I keep tossing dirt until I fill up the hole.
It was easier talking about slavery. The 3/5 compromise, the Confederacy, the Klan, black codes, Jim Crow, eugenics, lynching, the war on drugs, and mass incarceration, than this.
I said, with all you said, this history lesson, I should have been madder at Garrett.
Brav, nah. I should have been unaffected, like you.
The way my life is, sometimes I wonder if I'm living in a comedy or a drama.
Ain't no laugh track. This shit is real. I have a bullet wound to remind me.
Just because we don't hear laughter don't mean nobody's laughing.
Nothing funny about catching lead. Not a damn thing.
With every political conversation, we not only pointed the finger at the rest of the world, but we also pointed our fingers at ourselves. We debated or agreed on right and wrong, real and perceived, as an exercise more or less. And sometimes, like now, when we were at a swank spot, I like to think we were Du Bois and Baldwin at a cafe on the Champs-Élysées, Josephine Baker and Nina Simone at our sides, talking about the struggle while we were being intellectual and prophetic.
Then I felt the weight of an imaginary .38 in my pocket. I knew who I was. I had been trying not to be this man since I was 18. One job for San Bernardino had led to another, and then another. This had become my prison.
We got up to leave, and I glanced at a 20-something who had been checking out Jake Ellis. East Indian. Mane long and wavy. I'd seen her spine this way, biting her bottom lip, twirling her hair. She had watched Jake Ellis lick his ice cream cone,
had eyed him while he pontificated. Jake was the Beyoncé of African men. The cute millennial was with her oblivious husband and precocious child. Jake Ellis winked. She smiled, bounced her foot faster, and again bit the corner of her lip, touched her tresses. I'd never met a married person who didn't regret matrimony, at least for a moment. She had love. It was next to her. Sometimes a baby made love-crazy, fuck-happy couples pull apart. Babies changed the topography of marriage. Marriage became a business. It was no longer fun. Girls wanted to have fun. Most girls. The woman I married had had much fun. Men like Jake Ellis had winked at her, and she had taken them to her bosom. I said, don't look back at that man's wife. She's looking at me. Let this one turn to stone. I think her husband just caught her. You make white men want to act out on rage like Michael Douglas in Falling Down. I wish a motherfucker would. I shifted, uneasy. One more thing? What, bruv? When you were upstairs getting your tour, Garrett tried to bribe me. How much? $150,000. Said he'd pay me in cash. That's about 660,000 Ghanaian cedi, over 53 million Nigerian naira. He's not the first one with deep pockets to try and bribe one of us. Make sure you tell San Bernardino. Tomorrow. Again, let Garrett pay up first. Don't want any more complications. Jake Ellis turned. Let me go over there and get me a kiss from that sexy MILF. I grabbed his arm and we both laughed as we left the white man's overpriced bubble. Jake Ellis said, I have to get you home. For what? You left your phone home, in case Esmeralda rings and has that info. I still can't remember what else I had to do today. But right now, it doesn't matter. Chapter 13. A middle-aged Christian brother dressed in black jeans, gray tee, and an L.A. baseball cap was in the heat on the corner of Vernon and Crenshaw holding a large white sign that read, Jesus Saves Gangsters, Too. The top half of the word Jesus was colored red, the bottom blue. The reverse for the word gangsters. People who passed thought it was red, white, and blue, but it was only red and blue. Blue signified the Crips. Red stood for Bloods. On the opposite corner was a Muslim sister selling copies of Turning the Tide, the newspaper for the new Black Panther Party. This wasn't Culver City. We waved at the brother and sister like they were family, then cruised back into the heart of Leimert Park, where black scholars preached that African Americans and descendants of black or Negro slaves in other countries were the true descendants of the ancient Hebrew Israelites. We cut through the business district, passed by theaters, hair salons, coffee shops, Esowan bookstore, bicycle repair shops, and Jamaican restaurants. The area had been designed to be self-contained. Anything anyone needed was no more than 10 minutes away. That was the new selling point. Jake Ellis did an easy drive down Degnan, another well-kept street lined with palm and evergreen trees. Air warm, minds troubled. We found our way past dozens of two-story apartment buildings and turned east on Stocker. We were back off the Crenshaw Strip, where too many used the sidewalks as garbage cans. My daddy told me that the way the streets in the neighborhood looked was the way people saw themselves. We were back a few blocks from where people were always popping off and the music was always loud. Our section was pretty quiet, 4 blocks or so from the main drag, a lot cleaner than the Shaw. The only noise came when the middle school let out. They were the ones who littered. Our box of pride was bounded by Exposition Boulevard on the north, West Vernon on the south, Crenshaw on the west, and South Van Ness and Arlington Avenue on the east. There were maybe 13,000 people living in this small box. Most were black. It had been a black neighborhood since white flight, but now the demographics were changing. Posters reading, Resist Gentrification or We Shall Not Be Moved, We Will Improve, were in almost every yard and on every light pole. A war was going on. Between blacks and America, it was a never-ending war. It had been a long day. I didn't need another fight, but one was coming. An Asian man in a van was parked, hustling T-shirts with Afrocentric sayings. Harriet Tubman mourns for Freddie Gray. My president was black. I can't breathe. Sisters were yelling at him for having the nerve to co-opt black culture and black pain to make a dime on black blood. On this side of town, people rocked Obama t-shirts. Hardly a USA flag, but there were plenty of flags from the islands and Africa. The American flags most owned were folded, in drawers, given to families after a relative was killed serving a country that never served them in return. Someone was pulling out of a parking spot, and Jake Ellis waited, music down low. Then he parallel parked in front of his classic edifice. His one-bedroom spot was east of Degnan, a block from Audubon Middle School. Lemert Park was a pre-World War II neighborhood made of modest, Spanish-style homes, charming bungalows. Compared to Culver City and Pasadena, everything looked dull, worn. But it was our zip code. A group of white teens wearing black slacks, white shirts, and black ties passed. There were 10 of them. Young Mormons. They were probably going up into the hills to go door-to-door in Baldwin Hills, tasked with selling their faith, one that didn't include black people until not that long ago. If 10 blacks tried to walk through those boys' neighborhood selling blackness, they'd all be on a curb, handcuffed, while cops made up charges. While we sat there, another group of sisters sporting dreadlocks, braids, perms, and afros came down the street, passing out flyers, talking to the community. An orchestra of soul sisters, mothers of the earth. I always kept eye contact, let the breasts live in the periphery, and learned to notice and not ogle. The sisters made their way to us, came to the window to hand us flyers. Afro said, "Investors from overseas want to buy buildings and turn them into Airbnbs." "Serious?" "It's getting out of hand. Come to the meeting."
"Will do,"
Jake Ellis said.
"I heard they want to make our apartments expensive condos."
She said,
"That's one way to legally force the people to move, no matter how long you've been living there. They'd have to pay us about $10,000 each to relocate, which is nothing."
I said, "That would be the ultimate gentrification." She said,
"We'd push most of the people living here out. Older folks have been here renting 30 and 40 years. People on fixed incomes. Where will they go? No one will be able to buy where we live now. People work too hard to get out of the projects to have to go back."
I nodded. "The train line is accelerated to change." She huffed.
"I call that train what it really is."
"Which is?"
"An overground railroad for them to come in Columbus, new places."
"People on Crenshaw wanted that train, too. We're landlocked and need that train. We need to be able to get to the beaches and put our toes in the dirty sand and cold ocean, too."
She rolled her eyes. Wasn't about to hear anything I was saying.
"They've changed the name of the area from South Central to South L.A. Now we're like Soho and NoHo. We went to bed in South Central and woke up in Sola. First they claim it, then they rename it."
I said, "I'll be at the meeting."
"Black Lives Matter."
"Black Lives Matter." We agreed on that. Then they moved on. I read the flyer. Local activists and national leaders were fighting gentrification and promoting wealth building, demanding development without displacement. I wondered how many wars a black man had to fight in his lifetime. I wondered if I had gone to Africa 10 years ago, whether I would care about any of this bullshit. But everywhere a black man went, there were more problems. Jake Ellis said, "Wonder why they never used the word gentrification in any brochures."
"Who?"
"White people. They never used that word in their brochures."
"What word did they use to make it sound non-political and palatable to the naive?"
"Revitalized."
"Sounds like those vagina rejuvenation ads."
"Overground railroad. Hidden in plain sight." Our world was restless. Since that first boat trip, it had always been restless. Jake Ellis's phone rang. He frowned at the number, didn't answer. Phone rang again. He answered.
"Hey, sweetheart.
Not tonight.
Can meet you tomorrow, after I hit the boxing gym.
Santa Monica."
"I will meet you.
Call the W Hollywood. Get a suite.
By lunchtime."
His car was on, and his phone connected to the Mustang's speakers via Bluetooth. Without asking, The system put the call on speaker. He did a finger snap that echoed like a curse. Mrs. Garrett said,
I've had enough of this life. Money laundering, drug dealing, God knows what else. He has taken control over my life. Since we've been married, he's told me where I can go, where I can't go, has restricted my movements. I'm supposed to be a feminist.
For some, marriage is ownership. It just depends on who owns who.
He says he does it to protect me.
A dog on a long chain is still a chained dog.
I'm going to call Gloria Allred. She doesn't play. She's a real feminist. I can win this.
Elaine, I'm driving right now, and I'm still on the clock for my employer.
Didn't mean to babble.
You're safe?
I'm in my closet. I locked the door, put my red-bottom shoes on, eased into something a little more comfortable and a lot sexy so I could sip wine and eat the last piece of your magically moist salmon in peace. I can tell you went to culinary school. This food is truly an aphrodisiac.
Your husband?
He's gone, I think. Not sure. House is huge. Can't hear him screaming right now.
Tell me everything tomorrow. We can order a big lunch and mimosas and chat.
You stood up to my husband. I've never seen anyone stand up to him.
Had to show him who was the real man.
That scared me. It felt good at the same time.
I could tell.
He doesn't love me like Kunta Kinte loved Belle.
It shows. Your bruises told me a lot.
I don't want to talk about those. I don't want to feel like a fool and cry again.
Okay.
Can I tell you a secret?
Tell me.
I want to be with you.
Do you?
I should have left with you.
You know you couldn't do that.
I'm so wet right now. I could drown.
Tomorrow.
A generous lover with substantial offerings that won't die in the furrow.
I will massage your wounds and then take you to Africa.
Substantial offering. I've never had that before. Those words are stuck in my mind.
Goodbye for now.
As she eased her phone down, she said,
Alexa, play my love songs.
Massaging the bridge of my nose, biting my tongue, and shaking my head for that entire exchange, I shifted where I sat, knew I had heard more than Jake Ellis wanted me to hear. I said, be careful.
Bruv, when she undressed, she had bruises. Her clothes had covered them. New and old bruises. She is a woman living in a cage, like an animal at the zoo. I told her that.
Let her get her revenge somewhere else.
Can't put the toothpaste back in the tube once it's been squirted out.
If she wants to be a remora feeding off a great white shark, not your business.
I know, but the things I do are to get it Garrett.
You pimp slap a man with his own salmon, eat his gelato, then make plans to screw his wife?
You're a bad motherfucker. Can't say I like it, but I admire a man who can pull that shit off. Ken Swift, you're the bad motherfucker. I'm the baddest of the bad motherfuckers. We eased out of his Mustang as four Asian women jogged by.
They all waved.
Jake Ellis said, ever remember what else you had to do?
I shook my head.
I'll check my phone when I get home. Let me know the moment you hear from Esmeralda. Or Margot.
Will do.
A horn blew. A soft, friendly beep. Creeping underneath imported palm and evergreen trees, it was a black Tesla Model S. Their car snuck up on us, made both of us jump. A breeze made more noise than that electric car. The driver parked and came our way, hips moving sweetly. Jake Ellis looked at the time on his phone. Guess she finished teaching early tonight. Business classes at USC, right?
Engineering. Civil.
We're going to watch a movie called Charlie Steele.
Charlie Steele? Never heard of that one. Any good?
It was banned in South Africa during apartheid. I'll put it in a few more movies in Dropbox and send you a link. Then you can download them whenever you feel like it.
Cars slowed as the MILF strolled.
That rich West Indian woman was as beautiful as Miss Haiti,
Cassandra Cherie,
only she was more mature and still had a natural, smoldering, confident, sexy walk. The world rarely showed the beauty of Haiti. Jake Ellis smiled at her, and she smiled at him. Her hair was in a curly, kinky afro, about 20 inches of powerful ethnic pride. Silver earrings matched her mane. Her full lips were a shade of deep violet. She was a powerful woman of Haitian descent, daughter of a politician and a professor, former member of the Black Panther Party, astute businesswoman, gym rat, and novelist. If not for the silver hair and those skinny jeans with her traffic-stopping shape, I would have thought she was a collegiate woman. Her perfume was soft and sweet, dabbed on just for Jake Ellis to make her sweat it away during an act of Congress. And Congress was but a moment away from being in session. Without pretense, Jake Ellis said, "Catch you later, Kane Swift. She's married. Be careful. Don't need a Haitian-Ghanaian war in Leimert Park. If her husband knows where she is, then he knows not to come to my door. He can give her that fistful of tears when she gets back home. He knows that when she's with me, she's mine." "I'll find Margot. Since you put her info in my phone, I will monitor her Facebook, too. We'll see where she checks in. I will see if she and Jimmy Lee are in this thing together. I will help you fix this." I regretted I had used his phone, but that toothpaste couldn't be put back in the tube. The lovely Haitian paused 5 steps away. She grinned. I nodded at her, then walked away from Jake Ellis and Dr. Maeva Fouche. Let Jake Ellis reach for her hand, kiss her on the lips twice, then escort the sensual property owner up to his rent-free one-bedroom palace. She was carrying an overnight bag. She wasn't planning on leaving before sunrise. If she was staying, Jake Ellis would have to make her a big breakfast in the morning. Women never let Jake Ellis go until he had loved them thrice, ate them twice, and made them 2 good meals. I walked away, paused just long enough to watch teenagers doing McTwists on their skateboards. Reminded me of 20 years ago. I was a skateboard king back then. A block later, I came up on my fading yellow 2-level apartment building, one just as old as Jake Ellis's structure, but not as nice on the outside. I'd lived there for 80 seasons. Most of the buildings on what we called Apartment Row were 2 levels. A few had between 4 and 12 units, and most had been constructed between the 30s and the 60s. My random thoughts vanished when I saw someone standing under my window. The aggravated stranger paced the uneven sidewalk in front of my building. His body language screamed he was pit bull angry. He saw me and stopped marching, called out my name, and as soon as I paused and gave that gaze of confirmation, he clenched his teeth. He charged at me, became a raging bull with his hands in fists. Whoever he was, he had been waiting for me to bring my black ass back home, same as others had done years ago. My hand went for the .38 I carried, but I had left it sleeping in Jake Ellis's Mustang. My backup .38 was upstairs chilling out in my apartment, probably watching Netflix. I didn't know if my aggressor was armed, if he had come to break bones, or if he was here to kill. I didn't know if he was alone, or if car doors would open and 40 men would attack me. My gut told me Mr. Garrett had sent someone after me and Jake Ellis, only he had found me first. The madman yelled and charged at me like a wounded bull intent on killing a matador. In my mind, I heard Garrett rapping lyrics by Biggie Smalls. Not only did this motherfucker have a beef with me, he'd come to annihilate me. Chapter 14. My enemy wore unbridled anger, paired with black jeans and a gray hoodie. He was 6'3", about 190 pounds between toes and fro, light brown skin with reddish hair that was more wavy than kinky. The killer swung hard, clipped my ear, and that sting woke me up, told me this shit was real. I bobbed and weaved, and before he could come at me again, I became the next brown bomber, threw 6 fast blows, ate his ribs and stomach up the way termites eat wood, gave him some spots of pain to think about, and with the wind knocked out of him, it was all but over. He dropped like a rock, mouth bloodied, redness spreading across his face and tongue, collapsed holding his ribs and his nuts. That low blow to his family jewels was intentional.
I ain't got no problem clocking a man in the sacks in a street fight, because it's a damn street fight.
I checked to see if he had backup. No one else came running my way. I yanked his hoodie up, made sure he didn't have a gun or a tool to shank me. Then I kicked him twice. Put two solid roundhouse kicks into his gut. Again, he dropped to his knees. Fear had replaced his rage. My voice dressed in fury, I asked, "Who sent you after me?"
"I came to whoop your bitch ass."
"Who sent you?"
"Margot. She told me what you did to her when she took you to lunch."
"You're her pit bull?"
"I'm her fiancé."
"She wasn't wearing an engagement ring. Boy, don't come here lying. We're having a baby." "She's having a baby. Man can't do nothing but get a woman pregnant.
Let me go."
I shoved the fool away from me. This was the boyfriend. Another goddamn pretty boy. A light-skinned number covered in tattoos, just like my child. Not until I pushed him away did I see his ears. He was into lobe gouging, had a green circular symbol of Buddhism in each ear. His mouth was bloody because I'd hit him so hard his nose ring had been set free. I snapped. "You came to where I live to confront me? Boy, messing with me, especially today, will get your young ass dragged down 10 miles of bad road on your ugly face."
"You made her cry today."
"Boy, I am her father. We have the same blood. Understand that, boy. We are family. What went on between us ain't your business. And you came after me? What's this? Nobody puts baby in a corner, and you're Patrick Swayze, and you came to put her old man in his place?
Motherfucker.
Were you with her at the Grove?"
"You were at the Grove?
You didn't know?
I was in the car when she came back. You made her cry twice in one day?"
"She tell you why she was there?"
"It was none of your business."
"Who was the guy in the red car?"
"What guy?
Do you have any idea what the fuck is going on?"
"I love my girl. That's all that matters."
"You're the writer? Or the other guy is the writer?"
"What other guy?"
"Are you the writer?"
"I'm the writer."
"Why does she need $50,000?
"Get away from me."
"Oh, you're not surprised about that part. Who needs the money, you or her?" His face was contorted in anguish. He struggled to breathe. I looked at him and saw myself. Ethiopian loving and gotten the best of him, too. I sighed at the dumbest fuck, lovesick, pathetic mutt. Wanted to strangle him until his eyes popped out of his head, but I held his shoulder and said, "Lean forward and let the blood drain so you don't choke to death." He snatched away from my helping hand and cried out,
"You broke my nose."
"I didn't break your nose. The concrete broke your nose when you fell on your face."
"You broke my friggin' nose. I'm gonna sue you."
I feigned like I was gonna clock him again. He took off running. He galloped to the next building and dove into a dirty Nissan, same bucket Margot had been driving earlier, and left screeching. Too many cars and too many eyes were out for me to hog time and drag him around back to the garages. He ran the red light a block up, almost crashed. My daughter had sent her street-dumb Romeo clown to beat me up. I said, "I should have snatched those ugly-ass earrings out your damn ears." He was with her at the Grove, but she had left him in the car when she went to meet with her ex-boyfriend, and her ex had left his woman in his whip. That told me nothing, not right away. As life moved on for the denizens and traffic sped by, my concentration, my attempt to make all of this bullshit make sense, was interrupted when someone applauded. Across the street, in the two-level that was dull green and white, some of the stucco chipping away, one of my neighbors stood in her window. She waved at me. She always looked conservative, wore frameless glasses that made her look innocent, a contradiction to her smile. It was Bernice Nesbitt, my African-British neighbor. Long brown hair parted on the side, skin the hue of café au lait, and she was just as hot. Tall, with curves. She was gorgeous. At North Africa, maybe Algeria in her British blood, wavy hair. Bernice had lived there at least 10 years. Since she was about 21, she was more fit, sexier now than she was when she was 21. California living and the weather had done her good. She'd come to this side of the pond to attend university and rarely went back to the land of beans and toast. This was a deja vu moment from another ugly familial moment a decade ago. Today wasn't my first time being jumped right at my front door. Last time I'd been attacked, it was a rainy day, and that was the day I had met Bernice. She had seen it all.